This month's book for the morning's book club. May I welcome everyone, firstly those in the studio, Marion Hyde, our book chick. I'm just going to call you book chick. It's
absolutely
just easier
that's
to say.
Fine by me. Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm great.
Yeah, you're Thank fabulous you. Today.
I'm just bursting out of the seams today. I've also got Sally Leslie. Hello, Sal.
Hello, Nicole.
And you are one of our guest reviewers, and each month we have two new ones. So you're launching it. So your enthusiasm and passion will get others going, oh, I want to be like Sally and Mary Arthur. Hello.
Hello, Nicole.
Are you excited?
I'm nervous.
Oh, don't you dare be nervous. Not at all.
I am excited and nervous.
And you've done your homework. Oh, see, I feel bad. You're so prepared, you'll make me look ill-prepared. Now, let's introduce, and to everyone who has read the book, who is listening with bated breath at home, welcome. As we get this underway, the book is called Bleed for Me, a complex tale of deception that begins with the death of a former detective whose body is found in his daughter Sienna's bedroom. She is the obvious suspect, but of course, there's always someone who doubts the obvious, and that would be psychologist Joe O'Loughlin, who believes otherwise. His hunt for the truth leads him to a predatory school teacher, a race hate trial, and corruption at the highest levels of justice. I really have the voice for this today, I think.
You too.
Quite a feat. Now, considering his wife wants a divorce, his daughter thinks he's a failure, and he's also battling Parkinson's disease. So the man is having a tough time at the moment. I've introduced you to Mary and Sally, but it's time to say a big g'day to the man who made this all possible, crime author Michael Robotham. Hello.
Good morning.
How are you feeling about all of this, being the man at the moment?
I don't know. I've got a whole lot of women on the other end of the...
going
to gang up on me here.
It's like
me.
The view or the circle, but we're nicer. There you go.
I hope so.
We're nicer than all of those women. Well, look, can we just get an overall vibe on what we thought of the book? And we will announce spoiler alert. So if you haven't quite finished, because we might make things... I don't want to ruin anything.
No.
For anybody, and you certainly don't want that, do you, Michael?
No, of course not.
No. So
all that effort to write all those lovely twists and everything.
Exactly. So, Sally, what did you think?
Michael is one of my new favourite authors. I was very, very happy to know, Michael, that there are other books. That's the first one of yours that I've read, and that there are other books that I can go back and read. And I was also really impressed with your characters. I thought the retired detective and the psychologist was a really novel combination. It was brilliant.
It was a bit Magnum P.I. at times, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's just
no, I just made that up. That's not true. That's not true. And what about you, Mary?
I loved it, Michael. Same as Sally. This is the first one I've read of yours. And I can't wait to read the others that I've got listed here, ones you've written. And, I love the twists. And I didn't guess the murderer.
Oh, you didn't? See,
no.
Look, maybe, I don't know, I was walking in the shoes of a jealous woman and I was thinking, I think I have an idea.
Every time I thought I had it figured out, there'd be a new piece of information tossed in and it just threw me off, you know? And the whole way to the end, I was guessing.
Michael's very good at that.
He is, isn't he? Yes. And I do like the fact, because I have a very low concentration span, Michael, so that's what I love about your books, in that you open the chapter and something happens all the time. It's not like you're going, you have the details. So it definitely has a forward feel about it. So let's get to some questions, shall we? Mary, would you like to start off and ask Michael some questions?
Well, I just wondered if you went away to write, Michael. Is there a space that you write in? Because you would have to sort of be in that thought process of crime. I just wondered.
I've got three daughters, which will probably sound quite odd when you consider the subject matter of the book. But my daughters refer to my basement office as Dad's Pit of Despair. And and so I can normally be found in my pit of despair, although I do get out and sort of sit in lovely cafes on Sydney's northern beaches and write. It's a tough job being a full-time writer, really.
There it is.
With your mini laptop, having a latte.
Absolutely.
Writing about incredible things. And Sally, what question would you like to ask first up?
Look, I found the whole story really authentic, even though it was fiction. You know, there was just, it was real. You know, the characters were believable. It was just a really sort of complex plot. You know, it wasn't like you were sitting there sort of reciting sort of theory that someone had given you.
Maybe
so what was your experience
Perhaps that's partly to do with, I was a journalist for many years, and all of the books that I write are actually seeded in fact, and I never use the word inspiration because I hate to think of any crime inspiring anyone to do anything, but the seeds of the idea for Bleed For Me came about through a real life case where a woman by the name of Lynette Dawson on Sydney's northern beaches disappeared in 1982, and she's never been found. But through subsequent inquests, within a week of her disappearance, her school teacher husband had moved a 16-year-old babysitter into the house,
right,
who was one of his students. And it's been a very interesting case all the way through, never been solved, although various coroners have recommended that a certain person be charged, but without a body, the DPP has decided that it probably could not secure a conviction.
Right.
But that was the idea of the sort of, you know, nowadays with social networking sites, you know, I, as I mentioned, have three daughters and they've all got sort of Facebook sites and they're always sort of on the internet, and you do worry a little bit about this idea of grooming and people who can pretend to be what they're not on the internet. And so that was, I suppose, the seed of the idea. And perhaps that's where the reality can come in. You know, aside from, I think you've got to write really compelling characters and have the reader care about them.
They were compelling characters, and I actually thought they had a really good sense of humour as well. You know, I think every now and then the humour just sort of surprised me. I wasn't expecting it, you know. It was
I think
very
sometimes
good.
You have to lighten up the dark moments because it is quite dark in places, you know. But it's a very pure psychological thriller. It's not about sort of a big body count or anything like that.
No.
Can I jump on the elephant in the room here about the Parkinson's disease? Now, this is quite extraordinary because you seem to have a very good grasp of what someone who is battling Parkinson's would be experiencing, be it the tremors or the medication or how it affects them long term. How did you know much about this disease before you wrote this storyline into your books?
No, I didn't. I mean, I obviously did a lot of, again, the journalist in me means that I research everything meticulously, and that means obviously going to the UK and researching the locations and the like. I mean, I gave Joseph O'Loughlin early onset Parkinson's for two reasons, one of which was I was determined not to write a series, and I thought, well, there's no way my publishers will ask me to write a series if my main character has Parkinson's. Yeah. Of course, that made no difference at all. They said, we love this guy, bring him back. And the other reason was I love that sort of tragic sort of irony of having someone with a brilliant mind but a crumbling body.
That was good.
It's the Stephen Hawking sort of scenario, you know, the greatest mind of our generation, and yet he's trapped in this disintegrating body. And, you know, so he was going to be, I wanted to create this flawed hero who couldn't outrun or outfight, you know. He wasn't going to be this Jack Reacher style, you know, classic American loner hero. He was going to have a brilliant mind, brilliant understanding of human behaviour, and only two blind spots, really. He could never understand his wife or himself.
Yeah, or his daughter, for that
or
matter.
His daughter. Yeah.
Marianne.
I was just, I mean, how are you, Michael, anyway?
Fine, thank you.
I'll be seeing you in a month, which is very exciting. And one of the things that I really, I've actually always wanted to ask you is, when you had that stint as a ghostwriter, do you think that that's really helped influence the voice of your characters? Because as Sally has mentioned, and we were just talking about it before, the authenticity of your characters, you seem to be able to slip into the voice of a young girl, into the voice of, you know, a detective and all these different people. Now, and do you think that experience as a ghostwriter perhaps helped in your characterisation?
Yes, I mean, definitely. And as I say, you know, because I had this sort of three careers, first as a journalist and then ghostwriting autobiographies for people. But no, I mean, when you think I did 15 autobiographies, and they were pure autobiographies, not biographies, so I had to capture the voice of you know, I did Lulu and Rolf Harris and Jerry Halliwell for my sins. And all of these people have very unique, as we all do, a very unique voice and turn of phrase and sense of humour. And a ghostwriter has to capture that perfectly so the writer's fingerprints can't be seen on the book. Mm. And so when I came to writing fiction, I treat it much the same way. And I, I my characters are almost real and just whispering in my ear, telling me what they want me to write.
So does that mean that Joe is going to get lucky in love?
I brought Joe back. It's funny. I brought Joe back in this book purely because my wife insisted that I had to sort out his personal life.
I agree with
and,
your wife.
And I'm not. We can't tell people whether I managed to do that or not. But it does suggest that perhaps there might be another book. Maybe I might write a book from Julianne, his wife's point of view.
Ooh.
And we could just look at the world through her eyes. Because to me, that's what the beauty of writing.
Because you kind of get a feel for it, but it is a bit overshadowed by what's going on. There's so much going on in the book. Mary, I know you've got a heap of questions there, and I want to get as many of them in as possible.
Well, a lot of them have been answered already, but I just wanted to just talk about your descriptive parts of it, which I thought were beautiful. And it brought out how Joe really loves Julianne. One of them is when he was at her house, she allowed him to stay because they're separated, and she allowed him to stay. And he fell asleep on her chest, and it was her heartbeat. My heartbeat serenaded her to sleep. I thought, oh, you know, he really does still love her dearly. And
no, he's a bit of a sad soul.
Yeah.
He's desperately in love with her. Well, I mean, I love that sort of idea of, and the thing is, I think she still loves him, but it's this whole idea of loving someone but not being able to live with them.
And other descriptions were trees bent and twisted like arthritic old men.
The detail was brilliant, I thought.
Can I jump on the back of that? Because I also wrote down a couple of observations. the Robotham Club here. Look, if you're just tuning in, we are talking to Michael Robotham. We're not just going off our brains here and waxing lyrical. Bleed for Me is the book. That was our feature book for the book club. Michael, thank you for being generous with your time and being part of this. But this one got me. The living and the dead are greeted by stainless steel.
Yeah.
And it says so much. Or this one, the most destructive thing about jealousy is that it kills what it values. The love you want to save won't survive the constraints of jealousies. Of jealousy. Are these little treasures that you hear other people say that you you write down?
It's funny. Sometimes you do. I mean, sometimes, you know, you'll write 1,000 words in a day and throw them all away but keep one line. I'll never forget in my very first novel, The Suspect, which Joe O'Loughlin gets introduced in the opening page, he's trying to talk a young cancer sufferer off a roof because this cancer sufferer, teenage boy, just doesn't want to go through chemo anymore. And he's wearing a woolen hat because chemotherapy is a cruel hairdresser.
Mm.
And that little line there on the opening page, and when I wrote it, I just thought, just because your little heart just goes and you think, hey, that's a good line. You know. And that's what you do as a writer. You're trying to find, I mean, Hemingway talked about it. It's all about the battle to find the right word. You know? And sometimes, you know, you just have one of those little sort of eureka moments when the description is just there in just a few words. You've captured a complete scene or described a person in a single sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, I'm also really interested to know, this is Sally, I'm really interested to know what you read. Do you read for enjoyment, or are you sort of sick of reading by the time?
No, well, I mean, I do feel guilty when I read because I feel as though I should be writing.
Yes.
But I try to read outside the genre when I'm writing because I don't want to sort of be influenced by.
So who's on your bedside table at the moment?
Actually, well, I am reading in the genre at the moment because I've got a lot of writers' festivals coming up at the moment, and I'm trying to read the books of different writers that I'm going to be appearing with because I think that's only the polite thing to do.
Right.
To have read them, and so I'm reading. I just started last night the new John Connolly book, The Whisperers. He's an Irish crime writer who's very good.
Right.
I'm actually also, I read a lot for research. I'm reading a lot of, my new book, the next one, is partly set in Baghdad, and I'm reading a lot of memoirs of sort of war correspondents and the like.
Oh, that'd be very interesting as well.
Yeah. Does Not Me live in your house?
Yeah. Mr. Not Me, my children. It wasn't. Who did that? Not me.
Not me.
Not me.
You know, right at the start of this conversation, and you raise an interesting point about kids. You say, you know, it's hard to believe I've got, you know, three daughters. But one thing that struck me, and being a girl, being a rebellious girl, and the grief I gave my parents, you seem to have a very, very good understanding of the relationship between a dad and an angst-ridden teenager.
Yes.
I mean, it is. It's funny. I draw a tremendous amount of stuff from having the girls at home. And I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old and an almost 10-year-old. And so there's no doubt there are things that Charlie, Joe O'Loughlin's daughter in Bleed for Me, there are things she says that have come straight out of my daughter's mouth and conversations that I have with her, which I do shamelessly milk. I'll never forget. There's a wonderful scene that I had with my middle child Charlotte when I was, and it's in another novel. But I was pushing her on a swing one day, and she was about 5 years old, and she said, "Daddy, do you know if you squeeze your eyes shut really tightly and open them again, it can be a brand new world." And I thought,
I just got a shiver.
Fantastic out of the line.
Out of the mouth. So I thought, how can you not use a line like that in a book? It just has to be.
And if they really get in trouble, you go, that's it. Next book.
Yes. And they all want it all up, because the BBC have bought the rights to all of these. And
I can see this.
And and all my daughters obviously want to be in the book, in the CV shows.
Oh, as you would. You're an Australian crime writer. Why set this in the UK?
Partly because I lived there for a long while. I mean, writers aren't supposed to mention that there is any commercial imperative in what they do, because we're supposed to do it for just the art and the love. But I mean, I was a very successful ghostwriter, and for me to give that away and to write novels, I mean, I had to pay the rent and pay the school fees. So it made a lot more sense to set the books in the UK. It's a much bigger market. But I am intending to write an Australia-based one, probably in a book or two's time.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
Any final words, ladies? Anything that hasn't been discussed? This is your last chance.
No, I was just very, very impressed with the book, very impressed with the writing, and I will be looking for more Michael Robotham books.
Oh, look, you've won the I think it was the swing line, personally. I think that's what gets them in every time. Michael Robotham, thank you so much for joining us.